You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show,
Michael Dell from Dell Computers talks about what happened when he tried negotiating with Steve Jobs and what does the future hold, including the future of Bitcoin. During this later time when you were, you know, dealing with all this Wall Street stuff, you've also were going through your own deciding what you wanted to do and who should be CEO of Dell and what kind of person you'd want as CEO. What do you think makes a good leader of a $100 billion company that's never run such a company before? Like, how can you tell?
First of all, when you look across the spectrum of leaders, I don't think, you know, there's kind of one answer to that question, right? There are many, many ways to successfully lead. I think, you know, you want some combination of empathy and curiosity and being able to see around corners and being resourceful and being able to engage and inspire teams. There are certainly ways to prepare, but then, you know, when somebody gets in that seat, how do they actually respond emotionally to all the pressures and stresses and everything else? It's a unique job given the scale of a business like ours.
How do you inspire employees?
Passion, what gets them excited, what gets them motivated? Why is what we're doing super important to the world? And how can they make a difference in that? How can they succeed? We're doing things that are unbelievably important for our customers. We have the tools that we need. It's in our control. We're having fun. It's interesting. It's exciting. It's an adventure, you know, all of that.
And to what extent should an employee sometimes think like an entrepreneur? Like, when often they have a set of things they need to do given to them by their boss, who is given those things by his boss or her boss, and so on, all the way up to the CEO. To what extent should an employee be thinking, oh, I have a better way and I should try this and kind of break out on their own? And is that a typical path to success, is kind of employees who are entrepreneurial?
Well, this is kind of a big problem. You know, as organizations get big, they will have a kind of less risk appetite and try to suppress these kind of people you're talking about. And so I think it's really important for organizations to, you know, allow space for that and to nurture that and actually reward it. And so you want to embrace risk and make sure there's a place for it. You obviously don't want it everywhere, but you know, when you're trying to do new things and, you know, innovating, coming up with new solutions, you're going to need people to take plenty of risk and to have very entrepreneurial approaches.
You know, I wonder if this, like, you know, obviously the founders of all these big companies, they remain entrepreneurial all throughout. And, you know, you've been very entrepreneurial throughout the whole career of Dell. And I remember the story in your book where you're negotiating with Steve Jobs about licensing his operating system for the Dell computer. And it was very aggressive terms that he was proposing. And do you think that is key for success, both in an entrepreneurial creative sense, but also in a financial sense? Like, he was just very, the deal he was trying to negotiate with you to license the Mac operating system, if I was in his place, I would think, I like Michael. I want to do a deal with him. What deal's good for you? Let's just do a deal. But he was just very hardcore about trying to squeeze the maximum amount of dollars in that deal. And the deal sounded like it would end poorly for you.
Yeah. So that wasn't a deal that made any sense. You know, I think there's an element of shrewd negotiating and understanding, you know, economics at a fine molecular detail that's obviously important, you know, in running a business. At the same time, I think you know, you do want to look for, you know, win-win situations, and how do you split the difference, and how do you create some, you know, any partnership that's going to work over any reasonable period of time has got to be somewhat mutually beneficial.
Right. And so it seems like he wasn't aware how you would benefit in the long run or not from this deal, or I don't know. Like, why do you think some negotiators are so shrewd, they almost outshrewd themselves?
Yeah, I think he was still feeling around and trying to figure out, you know, what would happen, you know, if he licensed the Mac OS. I mean, I know he was very worried that our scale and supply chain, you know, nobody would buy Macs anymore. They would just buy the machines from us with their operating system. And so, you know, what he proposed didn't really make any economic sense.
Particularly the fact that he wasn't guaranteeing to support it in later years. So he could potentially pull your customer base from you without notice, essentially.
Right. So it was definitely a deal we weren't going to do.
So, you know, now you've achieved the success, you built this great company. It's going to last forever. It's a forever company, hopefully. And you spend a lot of time on philanthropy. What do you think is, there's a lot of talk in society right now about income inequality, for better or for worse. What do you think is the role of people like yourself or Jeff Bezos or others in terms of philanthropy? And you know, what practices do you put in place to kind of, you know, be helpful to society in other ways other than Dell? Not that Dell isn't enough, but.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point is we, you know, we've sort of said, gee, you know, how could we do something philanthropically that has a greater impact than the impact the company has had? We don't exactly know how to do that, but we're working to figure it out. I mean, we've been focused on children and urban poverty, and that's had us focusing on, you know, education and, you know, family economic stability. And, you know, we've looked for things where we can alter the trajectory of groups of people so that their lives 5 years on are meaningfully different. They have new skills, they have new opportunities that they didn't have before. And so, as opposed to kind of a perpetual, you know, here's a subsidy or something like that. So our foundation is really focused on mostly those kind of projects where we can, you know, meaningfully impact people's lives.
You know, I was wondering during all the economic lockdowns, particularly in major cities like New York City, something like 80,000 small businesses ended up going out of business permanently in New York City. And of course, many businesses survived because of, you know, the government stimulus and so on. Is there a role for the super wealthy to kind of help out? I'm not saying, is it necessary? I'm just saying, is there a possibility or is there a role for those who, you know, have the means to kind of help out in these unique, difficult situations like these lockdowns, knowing that the government's probably not going to do the best job in whatever it is they're supposed to do there? I don't know if I'm asking this right, but I was wondering, like, everybody was writing articles like, oh, I'm going to buy real estate in New York as a way to help New York City, but that doesn't quite help a city. What was the role of philanthropy during these lockdowns, do you think?
Yeah, so, the way we approached it was, one of the things we noticed was that the people that we were working with and helping, they did have some severe and significant challenges. And so they needed even more help during that period. So, you know, we initially set up a special $100 million, you know, fund within our foundation related to COVID, and did a lot of the things you're talking about with small businesses and how do you help folks through that difficult period. I mean, I think, you know, we saw certain businesses and organizations were more digitally enabled, you know, than others. And, certain kinds of things just really hard to do if you can't do it in person. But yeah, I think anybody who has had success, great fortune, great opportunity, I view it as a responsibility to figure out how can you do something meaningful to help others. And it's a super important part of how I think about the next portion of my life. And certainly, you know, talk about that in the book as well, in terms of most vast majority of my wealth will be used for philanthropy.
And what do you think will happen now? Like, are people going to go back to work? More than 50% of people have said they prefer working remotely. Many companies are permanently remote now. Like, how do you see the economic landscape changing and the work landscape changing? And look, Dell, one way or the other, Dell is pivotal to this. People work at home, they're going to buy different computers than if they're or they're going to buy more computers because they have some computer in the cubicle and some more computers at home. And I don't know, what's going to happen next? It impacts your business as well. Or you might have some foresight into what's happening.
I think, you know, what we've seen is so many people and organizations have figured out that, you know, work is not a place, it's something you do. And you know, a lot of people were pretty skeptical about work from home, but, you know, a lot of that skepticism has been dropped, right? And, certainly, you know, people in the organization say, hey, I like this flexibility. And what is really the objective function of being in an office? Well, there is an objective function for certain, you know, times and places and things that you're doing. And so what is that going to look like? I think it'll vary by organization. I mean, you'll see businesses that say, all right, for these functions, these groups, we're going to meet on these certain days in person. These other days, you can come to the office if you want. You can work somewhere else. As long as you get your work done, it's all cool, right? And so, I think we got a glimpse of the future, and we're not going to go back to the way it was. And people have learned behaviors in everything that they're doing, whether it's, you know, healthcare, education, entertainment, work, et cetera. And now, you know, things come to you. You don't necessarily go to them.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, pet parents, are you searching for the perfect place for your dog to play? Check out Camp Bow Wow. Our safe and supervised doggy daycare and boarding ensures your pup gets the socialization they crave while giving you peace of mind. With our certified staff and clean and spacious facilities, your dog will have a blast making friends and staying active. Join the Camp Bow Wow pack today. Your first day is free. Visit us at campbowwow.com. Franchise opportunities available.
I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers, and he waited a little too long, and both the programmers he was interviewing
took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. You know, it's interesting. The I don't know if he's an economist or urban planner, but the author Richard Florida has said that one role of cities is to be this kind of fountainhead of ideas and creativity for young people. It's where ideas and businesses and arts get started. But we saw so many people leave San Francisco, LA, New York City, and you're sitting in Austin. I'm in New York City. The beneficiaries have been the Austins. Austin's probably the biggest beneficiary in the United States, perhaps Austin and Miami and maybe Denver, of people leaving San Francisco, LA, and New York City. So there's this dispersal of talent that was huddled in those cities for a long time. Do you think that's like a permanent change in the landscape of America or the world?
Well, I think, I certainly interacted with plenty of people that have moved to Austin, Texas recently. And, you know, the way they describe it is basically, okay, I get some services from the government, right? You know, the government provides some kind of security or, you know, infrastructure, you know, education, whatever. And, you know, a lot of them are just saying, well, you know, what am I getting in return? How much am I paying for that? Right. And if it costs a lot less in one place versus another, but I can still do everything that I want to do, and it's, you know, works just as well, or maybe in some cases better. I mean, I think cities still play an important role, and people want to be in the beehive of activity, and they want to be around other interesting people. I don't see it as Silicon Valley is going to fail and Austin's going to succeed. I think they can actually both succeed. But with, you know, super broadband connectivity, 5G, people will be able to work more from anywhere, which is not a bad thing.
And where do you see Dell's role, the company's role in, let's say, the near future? Like what technological changes are you starting to have the foresight to think about that your company should be developing in the next phase of technology, whether it's, like you say, broadband all the time, everywhere you go, or, you know, there's going to be a lot more AI employees or you know, efficiencies generated by AI? What do you see as happening with technology in the near future and Dell's role in it?
Yeah, I think there are a number of super interesting things going on. You know, the first is that everything in the physical world is becoming intelligent. In other words, you know, you've got microprocessors and software and microcontrollers inside everything. You know, it used to be just the computers were intelligent. Right now, everything's becoming a computer or a computer controlled in some way. And the next step in that is everything's becoming connected. And so then you have 5G. And so then you get this world of not people talking to machines, but machines talking to machines. And that generates incredible amounts of data. And so you sort of get to reimagine everything in the world with, and while the last, you know, three or four decades have been super interesting and exciting, I think it's all just a pre-game show to what's about to come. So you have this sort of multi-cloud world with edge computing, enormous amounts of data. You know, the amount of data in the world is doubling probably every 7 months or so, except that time is shrinking, you know, every day that goes by. You know, the networks are getting software defined. And so, and of course, it's so much data, you know, humans can't really do anything with it. It has to be machine learning and AI. So all of that creates enormous opportunities. And, you know, I think the other big thing that you'll see is the technology sector, you know, will become a much bigger part of the economy, and not because of the IT departments, but because of everything else inside the organization. And, you know, there's also this kind of generational shift where the business leaders and the business line executives, the CEOs are now, you know, fully understanding that technology is the fulcrum of progress in pretty much every industry. So, you know,
like, what's the most amazing thing in all your recent adventures? And you probably look at new technologies all the time. What's the most amazing thing you've seen that's either here or coming right down the road?
I think, you know, when you look at what's going on in the intersection of the biological and computational sciences with gene editing and CRISPR, and that stuff is super interesting. I think, you know, look, just right in front of our eyes in the last year or so, right? We had these mRNA vaccines. That's amazing technology that, you know, appeared in all of our lives, or, well, maybe not everybody, but hopefully everybody's lives, you know, in a short period of time, and incredible. So I think the next 10 years, you know, in that field are going to be amazing. And it's all driven by computational power, AI, machine learning, and being able to, you know, decode all this stuff. And if you just take sort of a group of scientists and you say, okay, let's list out the, you know, 20 biggest unsolved mysteries of the world. Well, guess what? You know, it's computational power that's going to solve and address many of those, you know, in the period right in front of us.
Right. Like, if you think about, like, with genomics and gene editing, like you were just saying, it's obviously the cost of sequence of the genome has gone from $1 billion to $50. So that's, it's just like how computer growth grew exponentially, started off, you know, with, you know, very little computing power per computer. But then, of course, now it's amazing. And the same thing's going to happen with genomics. And most people don't quite see it yet. Right now, genomics is good for single gene mutations, things like that, where you could identify the exact gene that's causing a disease, for instance. But issues with protein folding or multiple genes that need to be edited, AI is going to have to play a role in that, for instance, just because humans can't. The complexity is too much.
Yeah, and AI, you know, drug discovery, and, you know, all the work around proteins is highly conducive to the advances in computational power. And I think, you know, what we think of as cancer, which obviously is many, many different forms. I think the next 10 years, we're going to see enormous progress on that, you know, driven by all this power.
And so what about in other areas? Like, what about money? Do you see anything in Bitcoin? Is that something interesting to you?
Yeah, blockchain is very interesting. I mean, I think there's obviously some hype there, and some of it is not going to work. But that's true of any new technology. We definitely see blockchain having some use. Our customers are experimenting. You know, even you know, if you look at sort of the 100 largest companies in the world, almost all of them have blockchain related programs, or certainly pilot programs that could have a meaningful impact on their business.
Like, what do you have going on?
You know, it's in supply chain, chain of custody, logistics, and then building tools to help our customers in banking, insurance, because they need a kind of enterprise grade blockchain that can create new capabilities. But I would say, you know, we're definitely, you know, in the enterprise customers, it's more in the experiment, test, pilot kind of stage.
Would you put any of Dell's cash reserves in a cryptocurrency, or you haven't really dealt with that?
Not ready to do that just yet. I've certainly made some personal investments in that to understand it a little more and that sort of thing. But there's no Bitcoin on the Dell balance sheet at the moment.
What about cybersecurity? This is obviously a huge issue for you, probably since day one of your business. Is it possible to defend ultimately against an aggressive enemy who's using cybersecurity, like a North Korea, or God forbid a China that decides to attack? Because all the time we hear like, oh, Twitter out for 3 hours, and then it was some sort of weird attack. So this is clearly happening all the time, all around the world. Are we as smart as the bad guys? They only have to succeed once, and we have to defend everywhere. So that's part of the problem.
Well, the cat and mouse game has been going on, you know, since the beginning of time. I think it's going to keep going on. And one of the challenges relates to what we talked about earlier, which is everything becoming connected. So the attack surface becomes 1,000 times larger. And unfortunately, at the end of the day, you're still dealing with, you know, humans who can make mistakes and be tricked and fooled. And so, you know, it's a constant battle. You know, we are building better and better technology that makes it super tough for the bad guys, which are concentrated in four specific countries, to get into these systems. And increasingly, you know, we think about intrinsic security is to say, how do we build security into the, you know, cloud service and the product that we're creating? Because, you know, trying to bolt these things on, and there are thousands of security companies that all claim to solve the problem. Some of them have to be lying. There's no way that it's all true. And even if it was, nobody can, you know, interpret 1,000 different security companies. So it's got to be more integrated and part of the solution. And, the other thing is we have to recognize, you know, when we get on a commercial airplane, you know, we go through various checks because we don't want somebody getting on that plane that wasn't checked, right? So you know, we do give up some little bit of privacy to ensure we're secure.
Look, Michael, I know you're pressed for time, and I want to be respectful. I really encourage people to read Play Nice But Win by Michael Dell. Again, I feel like it's a guidebook not only for entrepreneurship, and your story is iconic. Like, it's like the dream. I am jealous of that story. I wish that happened. I wish I put together computers in my dorm room in the 80s. And then it was also about, you know, the book has lots of great Wall Street stories, stories about what you're doing now with philanthropy, stories of your interactions with Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, others. Do you ever just wake up in the morning and call, like, I don't know, Jeff Bezos or Larry Page and say, hey, what's up?
Not exactly. We hang out with lots of other, you know, folks in the industry and don't like to be serious all the time. So, why not?
All right. Well, Michael, thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. And everybody should read this book. It's a great, easy to read book.
Thank you, James.